97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
And I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Joining us now is our chief legal analyst and partner with Harris Towel Fisher & Young, Brad Young. How are you, sir?
Ryan, I'm doing great, my friend. Blessed to talk to you.
I know. We had you on twice last week when I was filling in. Now, once this week. They must be really paying you overtime for this.
Oh, you have no idea, my friend. No idea.
Well, there, I saw this story, and this is in the last couple of days. There's a trial going on in Florida regarding Teslas, and it's a jury trial, which is interesting, too. So the idea is a person a couple of years ago were using Tesla's autopilot function, and I think they drove into a parked car. Someone ended up dying. So there's a trial now going on about it. So there's a lot of newfangled technological advances that I think a lot of people are unfamiliar with. And do cases like this test the law when there's something that hasn't happened before comes up in front of a judge?
Well, Ryan, this doesn't just test the law. It really shatters it. And let me go through. So let me go through some of the reasons. That's why I find this so fascinating. Legally speaking, obviously somebody died, and that's terrible. But from a legal perspective, it's fascinating. So let me break some of this down for you. During in a traditional negligence tort action, the jury has to find someone was negligent, and negligence is determined by what every person who's ever gone to law school knows is called the reasonable person standard. What would a reasonable person do in the same or similar circumstances? Well, in this case, there is no person. Okay, we've got a computer. So you can't say what would a reasonable self-driving vehicle do in a situation like this, because it doesn't make any sense. Also, when you talk about this idea of negligence, that means that somebody had a duty and they failed that duty. But does that apply to a computer driving a car? I mean, what you might have is some sort of, was it negligent programming? I don't know that that's even a thing. All right. You is it the software? Is it the hardware? Is it a sensor? Is it the owner operator? I mean, it blows up and shatters all of our ideas of holding a person negligent because there's no person involved except for the driver. And that really factors into this case as well.
So it's the main defense from Tesla in a case like this, essentially the driver is responsible for all of the car's actions, even if it's an autopilot mode?
Well, yeah, because, and this is where it was very important for Tesla and other car makers who have auto driving features to make sure that the lawyers get involved. Because one of the requirements is, and we've all seen it, if you've seen someone driving down the road, is that you have to remain awake and alert and essentially with your hands inches from the wheel at all times. Why do those attorneys for the car companies do that? This case demonstrates it, because in this case in Florida, the person who was behind the wheel, I won't say driving the driver, but the person behind the wheel dropped his cell phone in the floor of his car. He was down, had his head down in the floorboard, searching for his cell phone when the Tesla blew a red light and hit a pedestrian and killed them. And so Tesla's position is there was no auto driving feature even at play here, because the person was supposed to be there. They were by definition negligent because they weren't following our terms of service when it comes to how to operate the vehicle when it's in self-driving mode. So that's their entire defense.
Yeah, so I might have been thinking about a different case there. This is absolutely terrible. And all things considered, what happens when, let's say, state law plays a factor? Like if I was Tesla, I'd be thinking to myself, well, if they're not following state law and what is necessary for you to be on the road, then take it up with the state of Florida. Don't take it up with us, because they're the ones that supersede the things that we put into place. I would almost think I would rely on the state law to protect me in a case like that.
Well, the only state law that applies even in Florida is a state law dealing with people driving vehicles and negligence. And so the argument by Tesla is that the person behind the wheel, I keep wanting to call him driver, but he's not, the person behind the wheel was negligent because he was searching for his cell phone instead of being ready to operate the vehicle. So that's the only laws that really apply in this situation, because Florida doesn't have any specific laws about self-driving vehicles. But then it gets even to a bigger issue. If you're suing for negligence against Tesla, isn't that really a product liability case? I mean, it's not really negligence. It's a product liability that the car malfunctioned. But then you have to present evidence that the car did malfunction, that there was a problem with the code, the source code, or the sensors, or it just becomes extremely complex, more complex than really any personal injury lawsuit. And that's why I said at the beginning, it really shatters our idea of suing for vehicular injuries when there's a self-driving car involved.
Well, speaking of a new frontier, artificial intelligence, I saw some hearings, and Josh Hawley was a big part of the clips that were curated online. The idea that you have companies like Meta who are scraping data pools of information, works that are, I'm guessing, under copyright protection for their training of their artificial intelligent computers. And you have these large companies that are relying on other people's intellectual property and using that in order to benefit from that. Now, we don't exactly know how some of these different models work or how these AI computers think or how much of anything was taken from anything. It's just there's some of it that's kind of a mystery. But someone made the argument that if we're going to allow these AI bots and computers to scrape and take whatever they want, does that end copyright? Because if you can't be protected because of what these AI bots are doing, that could be the end of copyright law.
Well, I don't think it ends copyright law, but again, it stretches it maybe beyond what it was intended to do. Look, there's three main issues when it comes to AI and copyright. The first one is if an AI writes a novel, can that be copyrighted? The answer is no. That's already been decided. There was a great case, Ryan. You're going to love this. There was a great case where a monkey took a picture, and the monkey had the camera, and the monkey took the picture, and the owner of the monkey tried to copyright it and sell it, and he couldn't do it because he wasn't the photographer. And the Copyright Act says it has to be with human authorship. So the monkey took the picture, so it couldn't be copyrighted. It was in the public domain. So if a chatbot writes a novel, it's in the public domain. It can't be copyrighted. That's number one. Number two is the AI training, as you mentioned, where it scrapes and learns the English language. But most of the time, those AI don't reproduce the novel. So you don't really have a copyright violation unless it's reproduced somewhere. So then the third issue is the reproduction of copyrighted work. So, for example, if you go on ChatGPT and you say, give me a detailed summary of the novel The Hunt for Red October, and then it gives you all the detailed summary, that's a copyright violation. But simply scraping the novel, I don't believe, is a copyright violation if you're just teaching the AI how to learn and use the English language. It's the reproduction of that copyrighted work that becomes a violation.
I see the videos happen sometimes, the articles written where lawyers try to introduce AI video to put like their opening statement together. Have you seen any of those?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the judges go berserk, right? Because they're like, I want no part of this. We don't want some floating head Max Headroom giving testimony. You remember old Max Headroom? That might be a little before your time. But you know, they don't want Max Headroom presenting evidence at a trial, and they just throw it out because there is no procedure for allowing an AI avatar to be a witness at a trial.
Right. Well, in case even representing a person, I think someone was trying to represent themselves through ChatGPT, and they would take the text from ChatGPT and run it through a video generator as if some human lawyer was presenting it for him. It wasn't even coming from a real lawyer. It was just the artificial intelligence summary of what he thinks a lawyer should be doing or what they think. One last question about this AutoPen hearing, all the witnesses pleading the fifth so far. What happens in instances like this? So I know we talked about this a little bit last week, but the whole idea of trying to get to the bottom of this, it sounds like this oversight committee is going to get no answers from anyone. So pleading the fifth, correct, what happens in instances like this?
Well, for all witnesses except for Biden's doctor, okay, I want to exclude Biden's doctor for a moment. for all other witnesses, if they plead the fifth, the committee has to extend them a grant of immunity that states that they can't be prosecuted for anything that they say. Once that happens, they call the witnesses back. And if they still refuse to testify, they can be locked up for essentially impeding the work of Congress. It becomes a violation of a judicial order on a congressional subpoena. Now, that doesn't apply to the doctor, because the doctor also has doctor-patient privilege that he can fall behind and say, I'm not going to answer, even if you give me a grant of immunity, because it violates the doctor-patient privilege. But for all other witnesses, they can be compelled to testify. And if they don't testify, they're looking at jail time.
All right. There's this moment in Breaking Bad where where you have the two main characters out in the desert, and they are about to end the life of this person who's a lawyer. And he says, hold on, hold on. Do you have a dollar? Take a dollar and put it in my pocket. Now,
yep.
Puts it in. And Saul Goodman says, okay, now I can represent you. So anything that happens is privileged, and you can't, nothing could force me to say anything you tell me. I can represent you. So it's a very big point in the show. Is that how it works? If like, let's say a lawyer says, okay, under duress, put a dollar in my pocket. Now we have the confidentiality. And now the government can't force me to tell your secrets.
That's true. I will tell you, I've never had the experience of standing in the desert at the point of a gun and taking a dollar bill from someone who was nefarious. A drug dealer. I've never personally had that experience, but I can tell you conceptually, yes. The attorney-client privilege cannot be busted up unless, and here's where it falls down in that Breaking Bad, unless the attorney knows of future criminal conduct. And then an attorney has an obligation to break attorney-client privilege if the attorney knows or is made aware of future criminal activity.
Oh, well, this kind of blows the storylines apart in that show. What about the instances, the spousal privilege? So let's say Jill Biden, Joe Biden. Could the same privileges for a spouse be extended kind of like a doctor?
Yeah, but it's interesting. It doesn't flow both ways, so to speak. So what happens is this. If spouse A says, I'm not going to testify against spouse B and I'm exerting my spousal privilege, that stands. But if spouse B says, I want to squeal on spouse A, they can't block that testimony. You follow me?
It
really only flows one way.
Can Jill Biden say, I'm a doctor of education, so I don't have to double privilege?
Yes, because if we quote Whoopi Goldberg from The View, when she was talking about Jill Biden, she says, oh, Dr. Jill Biden, she's a wonderful physician. That is a quote from Whoopi Goldberg. But I don't know that there's any academic privilege here just because you happen to have a PhD in education. I don't think that exists.
You know, double privilege is a good name for a book, I think. I'm going to have to write that down. Or some sort of storyline for a show. All right, Brad Young, Harris Dahlfischer and Young, Chief Legal Analyst here on the radio station. Thank you so much for joining us and breaking this down for us.
My pleasure, Ryan. Anytime, buddy.
And I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Don't go anywhere. 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.